So just to go through today's agenda quickly, we'll begin with the short survey as discussed, and then Cassandra Cotton will speak to the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program by outlining the program's initiatives across Canada as well as specifically in Ontario. Crosby Debit will then introduce the Ontario program, the 4R Ontario Certification Program, in more detail by introducing the steering committee members, explaining the development process of the proposed standards, and outlining the scope, implementation process, and structure of the 4R Ontario Certification Program. Finally, Ron Campbell from the Ontario Agribusiness Association will outline the proposed standards in more detail. And the webinar will be concluded with a short post-survey poll. And as well, before the end of the webinar, we'll have a scheduled time for your questions where the 4R Ontario speakers will be available to answer any questions or concerns. Okay, so at this time, we'll get started with the pre-webinar poll. This is a prompted poll, and I will ask you each question one at a time on your screen. There's a total of four questions where you can select your answer of one out of five accordingly. Only you can see your answers, and they are anonymous. We will only be collecting the aggregated answers for data use. We will give you about the next 2 minutes or 30 seconds to a minute for each question to answer, and when all the four questions are completed, we'll move on and continue with the presentation. During this time, if you experience any technical difficulties or if you don't see the poll question on your screen, please let me know in the chat or raise your hand for the poll. That concludes the pre-webinar poll questions. There's a total of four. Thank you very much for answering those questions. It's much appreciated. I would now like to welcome our first speaker, Cassandra Cotton.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you. So I'd just like to start by providing a brief overview on kind of what the 4Rs are. I'm sure many of you are aware as growers, but I just wanted to give a brief overview as it relates to the certification program that we're talking about. So the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program is an innovative approach for fertilizer best management practices. So the approach considers three pillars, economic, social, and environmental pillars of nutrient stewardship. So the concept really, I feel like to say it's simple, focusing on four rights, applying the right source of nutrients at the right rate, at the right time, in the right place. But the implementation of this knowledge is site-specific. So essentially the agriculture industry, government, and conservation authorities in Ontario have committed to providing the 4Rs in Ontario as a science-based framework for implementing, validating, and communicating the efforts that we're talking about today. So the right source means ensuring a balanced supply of essential plant nutrients. The right rate is applying just enough fertilizer to meet the demands of the plant while accounting for the nutrients already available in the soil. The right time means applying fertilizer when the plant will get the most benefit and avoiding the times when fertilizer can be lost to the environment. And the right rate is where the plants can easily use it and where it's less likely to be lost to the water or the air. So briefly, I'd just like to go into details and explore kind of those four principles a little bit more with you, starting at the right source. So the first key principle of right source is the idea of a balanced supply of nutrients. Since the nutrient in shortest supply limits growth, if you can add a nutrient to the soil that's already there in sufficient quantity, then the crop will not respond to it, or at least not in a positive way. The other side of the coin is if you have two nutrients that are in short supply and you only add one of them, the crop will not respond, or at least not very much, until the second nutrient is added. So when it comes to crop nutrients, essentially don't add what's already there, and when you add things that aren't there, you need to balance them out. The second important principle when making source decisions is to make sure that the source of the nutrients is a good match for the soil. So this means you have to take into account both soil properties like pH and soil conditions like moisture. For example, avoid applying urea to high pH soils due to a higher risk of volatilization. Thank you. Awesome. In terms of the right rate, the two most important scientific principles underlying right rate decisions is soil supply and plant demand. So supply and demand. The idea behind the supply side of the principle is that we need to assess all sources that are contributing to nutrients to the crop when determining nutrient addition rates. So while this is conceptually a pretty simple idea, it's often difficult to put into practice as multitude of factors interact to control nutrient supply. So assessing nutrient supply is not an exact science, but that said, we do have some tools, for example, soil testing, that give us good approximations of nutrient supply in the soil. When it comes to nutrients added as fertilizer or manure, we can directly measure the quantities added to the cropping system. And then on the demand side, demand is influenced by variables in the cropping system, including moisture, temperature, and soil type, which all help to determine crop growth and how much of each nutrient they will need. So demand also varies based on the crop type. Obviously, like wheat is different than corn, and even based on the variety of the crop chosen. So remember that it's important to assess both the nutrient supply and the crop demand when making rate decisions. In terms of timing, the third right, the right time for nutrient additions is closely linked to the supply and demand idea that we just covered. But if you think about the way a crop grows, it's let's take an annual crop such as corn, for example. Early in the season, the crop is small and nutrient demand is fairly low, but in most parts of Canada, soils are still cold, and the soil supply of nutrients like phosphorus can be too low to meet even that small demand. So once the crop is established, the growth rate accelerates and nutrient demand increases through the vegetative and early reproductive stages. Then as the crop matures, the growth rate and nutrient uptake slows and then stops. So as the season progresses, soil supply also tends to increase for nutrients like nitrogen that are supplied in part through mineralization of soil organic matter. So we want to make sure the nutrients are there when the crop needs them, whether it's early in the spring or mid-season, and we want to take into account that the soil supply of these nutrients changes.
Through the phone.
Sorry?
Some of them I just called in.
Oh.
Hi there. Are you joining the audio? This is for the farmer webinar on the Ontario Forest Certification Program. Go ahead, Cassandra.
Okay, that's all right. The second principle for right time is to consider the risk of nutrient loss in terms of timing when deciding the timing of your application. So when nutrients are added to the soil, they don't just sit there until the crop takes them up. They can, you know, be absorbed into surfaces. They can move below the rooting zone with water, which means leaching. They can be lost to runoff. They can be transformed into gaseous forms and be lost to the atmosphere, as some examples of that. So all these processes can remove nutrients from the available nutrient pool, and it's important for us to consider these losses when we make timing decisions, both to ensure adequate supply for the crop and to minimize any environmental impact from the losses, which means you're losing money. And the last one, in terms of right placement, so making sure that nutrients are in the right place means we need to think about nutrient placement on the scale of the individual plant and on a larger management unit or landscape basis. So at the smaller scale of individual plants, different crops have different rooting patterns. So corn and wheat, for example, have a fibrous rooting system with a largely horizontal orientation. Soybeans have a taproot system with a primarily vertical orientation. So in a sense, corn and wheat have a greater ability to explore the soil near the surface for nutrients, and soybeans have a greater ability to explore the depths, as an example. So when making placement decisions, particularly for fertilizer, it's important to consider whether the placement chosen matches the rooting orientation of the crop. And this is kind of the first principle under right place, to consider the rooting patterns when making placement decisions. And the other way in which placement needs to be considered is with respect to spatial variability of the landscape. So we all know that crop yields varies across a field, and this variability in production potential depends on a number of soil and microclimatic factors. So right place means we should consider this spatial variability at the landscape level when developing our BMPs. So that kind of wraps up a quick look at the four principles that form a framework for developing the BMPs. So kind of what I'll go into quickly before I turn it over into what's happening to implement actually is the three pillars of the four R's. So while those are, the source, rate, time, and place considerations, there's also sustainability goals that you need to make on your farm as it relates to economic, social, and environmental. So what are some appropriate goals that relate to a 4R plan? Some examples for economic goals are there in terms of improving farm profitability by improving your return on fertilizer dollars spent, contributing to improved regional economic development. In terms of social goals, you might want to make things such as improved access to sources of information to assist in decision-making, increased or improved productivity of farm labor as one of those environmental goals, obviously preventing nutrient loss from the cropping system and improving recycling of crop nutrients from crop residues and livestock manures. So the point is really that goals, while they are part of the bigger picture of 4R nutrient stewardship, need to be relevant to your farming operation and to the need of you and your family. So they also need to be relevant to other stakeholders in the local and global community. And, you know, by stakeholders, we mean things like, you know, neighbors, people you do business with, governments, the companies that use farm products to make other products, and at the other end of the food chain, you know, the people who actually sit down at the supper table and whom you help to feed. So the goals really need to be something that better nutrient management of the cropping system can influence. So we always encourage starting with a goal list that's relatively short and to actually focus on making real progress on, you know, one or two of those goals in each of those three areas that, rather than setting a bunch of goals that are hard to meet or hard to measure. So how are we implementing 4Rs? You know, we're engaged with provincial governments, farm groups, environmental groups, and as well as industry to link each province's objectives for environmental performance with 4R nutrient stewardship. So as you can see from the map, we have a lot of activities being undertaken right now across Canada and internationally as well, but in all the major agricultural regions, obviously, you know, the territories in Newfoundland and BC aren't a high target area for us in terms of agriculture. But essentially, these projects include in each province, knowledge sharing, development and distribution of information, training, field extension trials and events, research, and in Ontario, specifically, what we're talking about is rolling out this certification program. We've shown this slide lots of times, and my boss, Clyde Graham, often likes to make the joke on this slide that it actually looks like some kind of new, like, health smoothie or something that someone's drinking, but I've been told that this is a sample of water taken from Lake Erie. And really, this is kind of the genesis of the conversation around the need to improve fertilizer application practices in the province and ensuring that we're meeting the demands of not only the public, but the government who are influenced by the public for making their policy decisions around how fertilizer is applied in agriculture. So obviously, we recognize the importance and the role of fertilizer in ensuring the health of the Great Lakes, and so that's why we're doing what we're doing. So I'll turn it over to Mackenzie, and I believe Crosby will talk about implementation in Ontario specifically.
So thank you, Cassandra. At this time, we'll welcome Crosby Devitt with Grain Farmers of Ontario. We'll introduce the background and structure of the upcoming Ontario 4R certification program.
Okay, thanks, Mackenzie and Cassandra. It's Crosby here. Hope everybody can hear me. I'm with the Grain Farmers of Ontario, and my role in the webinar here is to provide a little bit more context and understanding of what we've got planned directly here in Ontario. So I'm going to start with a little bit overview of the 4R Nutrient Stewardship in Ontario program that's been developed, talk a bit about who's involved and how it will work, and then Ron's going to get into some of the details specifically around the standard that will be rolled out in Ontario. So as we know, just before we move on there, as we know, Ontario farmers are leaders in nutrient stewardship. We represent a big portion of Canada's farmland, and a lot of that's very high productivity farmland, so nutrient use has a long history. And so the 4R Nutrient Stewardship is really designed as a tool for farmers and retailers and the whole industry to demonstrate stewardship but also improve what we're doing. And one of the really significant points to make, I think, here is that this has been developed in conjunction with a lot of other discussions that have been happening within the industry and with government. And one of the things to note is that 4R Nutrient Stewardship is directly referenced in the draft Canada Ontario Action Plan for partnering on achieving phosphorus loading reductions in Lake Erie. So a bit of a mouthful there, but it's certainly recognized both by industry and government as a program that could be very significant. I guess some of the aspects around the 4R program that is existing in other places, but planned for Ontario here, is that it does provide the opportunity for industry, both farmers and the greater industry and the retail and consultant sector, to show leadership in our industry and making improvements. Also, you know, to have real benefits for the environment and do things better in the broader scale. But another key point of it is that it's because of its framework and the way it is, it's adaptable across geographies and types of farms. And that's a pretty significant part of making any system practical. So as you see, when we go through the standards, provides that opportunity. So I'll just move on to the next slide here and just kind of give a little overview of who's involved in it. And that these groups were all part of a stakeholder steering committee that put things together. But really what formalized was a memorandum of cooperation that was put together between the Government of Ontario, Fertilizer Canada, and the Ontario Agribusiness Association. And that was done with a three-year investment of about $300,000. And that helped develop the standard and do a number of different things leading up to where we are today. And so those groups kind of at the core brought in the other partners and did a bunch of work over the last 3 years leading up to this, including grower surveying, developing a certification that's special to certified crop advisors, as well as doing some pilots and demonstrations on farm to really make sure things will roll out in a smooth way. And really what we've got through today is that we'll be talking about is a voluntary retailer certification program that will help accelerate it, which we'll go into a little more detail. So in terms of development, I mentioned the steering committee. There was a 4R science and tech working group that really developed the standards that will be presented here. And really the basis for the program was patterned after the 4R Ohio certification program that was previously developed. So that was essentially used as a base and then examined in the Ontario context and amended and changed and to match better what would work on farm in Ontario, but also what are some of the more regional priorities for water quality that have been stated provincially. And also, as we know, research continues, and the goal here is to incorporate the most current research possible into it and allow that to be updated. And so that that made its way into the standards that we'll be seeing a little later. So when we look at the goals overall of the certification program for Ontario and that Ontario Memorandum of Cooperation, there was, there's a big aim to address concerns in Great Lakes water quality, to, you know, have long-term improvement on water bodies and so on. But really, I think we can look at some, there's more than that. And, you know, the first one here, optimize crop uptake of nutrients and minimize losses. That's a real practical goal that can help us as farmers directly immediately if we can do things better and better utilize the fertilizer we're putting on our crops. I mentioned the long-term impact on water bodies. Certainly that's important. But also there's that whole sharing of up-to-date information and making sure that if we're making improvements on the farm and having a difference, that we have the ability to share that in a way that's understood by the broader community. And also I mentioned research and technology. As it goes, the 4R certification and process can help us sort through and use new technology and the results of research in a better way as we go forward. So just kind of looking back to the farm side of things, as this is the kind of farmer focused webinar, there are some things that we can see providing some benefits directly on the farm to this 4R program. And one of them is, as I mentioned, we can show and prove to external stakeholders what we're doing. So that might be government, it might be non-government organizations or the general public to show, you know, what are we doing to improve our environment? What are we doing to be more responsible, which is becoming more and more important every day. And that is coming through in some different ways. And in some cases, we have end-use customers looking for sustainability proof that the crops that they're buying from Ontario farms are grown in a sustainable way. And the 4R program is a key part of that, as well as some other aspects too that are sometimes built in. The other thing that, you know, we talk a lot about regulators and environmental groups, and what we're trying to do here is in a voluntary system meet and exceed the demands that they're coming at us with. And really, due to the variable nature of Ontario agriculture and so on, that ability to tailor solutions and provide a practical way using this framework is likely to be a much better approach than a regulatory approach, for sure. And finally, but not the most insignificant, is we're really hopeful that this helps growers become more efficient and help their bottom line as well, as we can do better with fertilizer as we go and get the crop using it exactly the way it's intended. So just going to talk a bit about the scope. So certainly it's an Ontario 4R program that we're talking about. And it's really been designed as a set of standards that are auditable. And so basically becoming the 4R nutrient stewardship criteria. And it is going to be a voluntary program geared towards nutrient service providers. And those nutrient service providers include ag retailers, ag service providers, as well as certified professionals giving advice to farmers. And as I mentioned, they are auditable and across all of Ontario, but certainly some of the initial focus will be in the Lake Erie watershed area. So there's been a structure developed that allows this program to be rolled out, but also auditable, which is important for the third party side of things. And so the standards will be audited in as a third party, and the Agrochemical Warehouse Standards Association has been selected as the organization that will be that third party auditor. And there are 37 criteria or standards, which we will hear from, and they break down into four different areas. So training, fertilizer recommendations, application, and then the documentation side of things that kind of comes across. And then each of those criteria will be rated by the auditor as a comply, do not comply, or not applicable. In some cases, that may be the case. And so as we move towards implementation, we've got a timeline kind of established here. Today, we're right in the middle of a comment period that we're 45-day that ends the end of February, so the end of the month, and certainly open to all comments and suggestions that will be collected and reviewed by the steering committee. But the goal is to have the standards published April 1st and implementation shortly thereafter through the fall 2018. And in terms of a audit and review cycle. There'll be a two-year cycle to keep the certification. And you can see Mackenzie's contact information on the screen there. She's collecting all the comments and certainly open to discussion and things like that as we go. So that is the end of the introduction, and I will now, I guess, pass it back over to Mackenzie to introduce the standard.
Perfect. Thank you, Crossy. I'll now introduce Ron Campbell from the Ontario Agribusiness Association, who will go through the 37 certification standards with the related evaluation criteria. Please welcome Ron Campbell.
Thanks, Mackenzie. You can hear me?
Yep, I can hear you well.
Perfect. Thanks. So I think Crosby's given kind of a good overview of the what 4R Ontario has been in working on towards developing these standards. So I'm going to go through the various audit standards that have been developed by the Science and Tech Working Group using that Ohio template. Before we get right into those, there's a few things I just want to point out can help put in some of these things into context. So first off, when a retailer is audited, they're only audited on what they can control. And this will come up in a few of the standards, and there might be some questions, and we'll get into that later. Basically, most of what we're discussing here are fairly common practices. There are some standards, however, that could impact some of the relationship between the farmer and the crop input retailer. So that's why we want to get these out and for review and make sure everyone is on the same page. There's four categories. I'm going to provide an overview of each of those categories, and then we'll look specifically at some of the actual standards. So I guess we can get next slide. So the training requirements, there are six of them. And the first, the three on this page are around training requirements that the retailer must provide for staff in dealing with 4R. There's the obvious training around agronomics and making those recommendations. The auditor will be looking that you have certified professionals, as it says in T2, that have their certification of good standing. Certified crop advisors will fit in for this, and especially as we move forward, more of a focus on those CCAs that have the 4R specialty. And then there will also could it also include certified nutrient management consultants as part of nutrient management plans. There is also a training requirement, though, around all staff, applicator staff, and sales staff, as well as the agronomy staff, to make sure they're aware of the concepts of 4Rs. And during an audit, an auditor will be meeting with these different groups and asking them some basic questions about 4Rs, so you have to make sure you have them trained up as well. Next slide. And four is also around retailer training as well. So for the purpose of this call, probably the interesting ones are T5 and T6. So the nutrient service provider, which is likely the crop input retailer, also has a requirement to make information available to their farmer customers. So that could include presentations at grower events, the winter grower meeting, those types of things, and also some proof that they're making information available. So one of the things I think 4R Ontario will be working at is developing some additional materials. There's already, and I would suggest anyone who's interested going to the Fertilizer Canada website under nutrient stewardship, there's already some online courses and training available. Those types of things will be made available, so the retailer has to show that they're making an effort to educate and raise the awareness of 4R with their customer base. Next slide.
Sure. So I guess we'll just pause here, if that's okay, Ron, and ask if there's any questions that pertain to the training requirements section of the standards. If so, feel free to unmute your phone and ask Ron at this time about the standards question.
Yes, Ron, is this going to be a mandatory program for all retailers?
No, that's a good question. It is a voluntary program. It's similar to what they have in Ohio. It will be up to each individual location to determine if they wish to go through the audit process.
any other questions related to the training requirements at this point?
I guess just a follow-up to that question then. So if it's just a voluntary one, I guess what's the point of policing it then?
Well, I think it's the point is to develop a voluntary program. We think our most locations are fairly close and are already doing a lot of these things, but this provides the documentation and support to show that we're doing what we say we're doing. And as part of, as we move forward with this program, being able to report that X number of locations that cover X number of acres are 4R certified will certainly help when we're talking to governments and the public to show that we are following the best practices possible for nutrient management.
Okay, we do have another question and answer period at the end of the webinar, so if there aren't any other questions related to the standards, we'll move on to the next section, which is recommendation requirements.
Okay, so obviously a big part of nutrient management, and Cassandra kind of gave the background of 4R, shows that, you know, the recommendation is a very important part. So we'll go through these. R1 basically says that any soil analysis conducted is done by an OMAFRA-accredited lab, and it gives a minimum requirement that these reports include organic matter, phosphorus using the Olson test, potassium, and pH. This is just a minimum, so other things can be included, BEC, other factors, but we figure that's the basic minimum that's needed to make an appropriate recommendation. R2 is also a bit of a, might become a bit of a change, is that soil tests are conducted at least once every 4 years. Cannot do a proper recommendation unless you have a soil test in hand to show what's currently in the soil. So this will be a requirement for our program. The four years was selected basically because the OMAFRA recommendation is 3 to 5 years, so we went with the average. I think a lot of, obviously, farmers who are on a three-crop rotation are probably doing it every 3 years, so they will meet that four-year requirement. Number three kind of ties into that. Nutrient recommendations utilize the soil test history of the field, including results from the most recent soil tests. So basically, the auditor is going to be looking at where possible. It's not just the most recent test that's being used, but also any previous soil tests of that field or part of the field are included in the recommendation, showing trend lines in NPK and P&K levels or organic matter levels, those types of things. And the minimum requirement for a soil test, which is R4, is that they are taken at an appropriate depth and from a relatively uniform area no larger than 25 acres. The 25 acres has been a fairly standard maximum size over the years. Certainly, we're seeing a trend towards more grid or zone sampling, which is using smaller areas, and that's certainly, I think, where we see things evolving into. But to begin with the program, the 25-acre maximum is in place. Should also be noted, this is, you know, it's a living document. There will be continuous improvement as this as we move forward with this program. Guidelines could change or evolve over time. Next slide. One thing we did have to factor in is 4R's, you know, was developed by the fertilizer industry, and certainly that was the focus when the certification program began in Ohio, but obviously, you know, to be part of Ontario agriculture, we need to incorporate livestock and poultry into the program. Manure is a nutrient source, no different than mineral fertilizer. So we have included some guidelines around manure. And so for this one, if manure is applied, content of total and available nutrients is based on either OMAFRA's database average for the specific manure type or using sampling and analysis following recognized guidelines. And the reason we gave the option is that in most cases, to do a proper manure sample usually involves agitation, and that doesn't happen until the day it's actually being applied. So that's where the database can come in handy for factoring in manure nutrient values. Number six, nutrient recommendations recognize and adhere to minimum setbacks from all known sensitive areas, such as wellheads, inlets, water bodies, specified in applicable law. So just have to factor in if there are areas that require a lower rate because of these sensitive areas, those have to be factored into the nutrient recommendations. And then R7 follows on that, giving a setback distance for some of those. So farmers who are a part of maybe clean water in a sensitive zone for that program, that has to be discussed with the retailer and that factored into the recommendation and application. Next, please. R8, pretty common sense, but all sources of nutrients are accounted for in the nutrient stewardship plan, so including your commercial fertilizers as well as manure, biosolids, cover crops, and the previous crop. So the what happens during an audit is the auditor will come in and pull a representative number of files from the retailer and start going through those, and basically the retailer will say, on this field at this farm, this is what we recommended, and then they're able to kind of show their work. And obviously this is that they factor in all nutrient sources when they come up with their recommendation. R9, the crop yield goals are discussed with the grower and based on previous crop yield history, just put in there to show that if the recommendation is based on 250 bushel corn in an area that averages about 175, you've got to be able to prove that what you're working with is realistic. Number 10, recommended nutrient application rates are at or below limits specified by nutrient application recommendations recognized by a government or academic institution that reflects the growing conditions in the area. So to take a step back, in Ohio, basically they reference the tri-state recommendations. In Ontario, we have the Ontario recommendations through OMAFRA and Soil Management Committee. But we wanted to be a little more flexible. So if you're in the Southwest and you have growing conditions similar to Ohio, Indiana, then the tri-state could work for you. If we also included the government because of those farmers under the Nutrient Management Act, obviously that the recommendations made through NMAN would need to qualify. So basically you can use, as long as you can make the case that the recommendation source is relevant for your area, you can use that to make recommendations for your customers. Number 11, if urea or UAN is broadcast and not incorporated within 24 hours, it is recommended to be applied with enhanced efficiency end sources, and this ties in with R12, that a discussion takes place between the retailer and the customer around nitrogen management, including options of split application inhibitors or slow-release technologies. Obviously, this is related around greenhouse gas emissions there's been a lot of work on nitrogen management there, and that needs to be incorporated. Obviously, the initial focus of this is on phosphorus in Lake Erie, but we're looking at some of the other issues around nutrient use as well. So that concludes the 12 recommendation guidelines.
Sure. So at this time, I'll just remind everyone that we will have a more general question and answer period at the end of the webinar, but I'll stop at this time and pause the presentation on these standards to give the opportunity to ask any questions that are specific to the recommendation section of the proposed standards. If you do have any questions at this time, feel free to unmute your phone and ask those questions. Okay, if there aren't any questions at this time, we'll move forward with the application requirements. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, so we'll change the slide. There we go. So application, you know, the first one, application record shall not exceed recommendations for custom applied acres within an acceptable margin of error for calibrated equipment. So once again, if that retailer is doing the custom application on behalf of the customer, it's, you know, whatever it was recommended for that field, the total of that supply should not exceed that. It's fairly common sense. We did put in the acceptable margin for error just because obviously you don't want to be 1% over and have that be a problem. 10% over, you probably have a problem. But that's A1. A2, phosphorus injection, subsurface banding or broadcasting with immediate incorporation are the recommended placement methods unless the risk of phosphorus loss to surface water has been demonstrated to be low according to a provincially approved phosphorus index risk assessment procedure. So the big push certainly with this, whether it's custom applied or if the grower is doing their own application, is getting that phosphorus into the ground as quickly as possible, either with application or immediately following if it's broadcast. It references the phosphorus index, risk assessment. There is work being done at both federal and provincial levels around this. I don't think we have a something that's readily available right now, but we're hoping things are coming soon that will be available to help guide some of these decisions as we move forward. A3, crop nutrient applications are neither made nor recommended to be made on frozen or snow-covered ground. This is obviously following along what we're already seeing on the manure side. You know, we're making sure that crop input retailers, when they're applying, are not applying during this time period as well. Next page. A4, total application of phosphorus not to exceed the quantity needed for the next 2 years of planned crops. Instead, you know, we have some cases of 3 or 4 or more year loading being done. We are putting the limit on a retailer will only apply at maximum 2 years of what is needed at a time. A5, nutrients are applied according to a written nutrient recommendation that is prepared within the prior 3 years. So basically requiring that the retailer and their farmer customer is having fairly regular updates of the plans and making sure that the nutrient recommendations and subsequently the applications follow that. A6, all nutrient application equipment must be calibrated at least annually. So basically requiring the retailer to have records on file showing that they have calibrated the equipment to show that it is applying what they think it's applying. A7 is definitely a change in how things are done. So for this one, a retailer would not be allowed to apply unless there was immediate incorporation, if there is at least more than a 50% chance of a rainfall event involving more than 25 millimeters or 1 inch of rain beginning in the next 12 hours. So for the purposes of the audit, the retailer would have to have print off each morning a weather forecast. They have to use the same weather forecast all the time. They can't cherry-pick which one they use on a day-to-day basis. They have to be consistent. If the forecast shows that there is a greater than 50% chance of a 1 inch or greater rainfall, they should not be applying any nutrients during that 12-hour period. Obviously, weather forecasts are not...
The ice machine, the...
100%?
But I need another one in there.
It's not 100%, but it is a risk management program, so you have to take the best guess with the best data available to you. So there will be cases where, yes, it's probably a greater than 50% chance of a 1-inch rain and nothing comes, but they can't apply. There'll be some cases where there's a forecast for a low percentage chance of rain and ends up being a deluge, but that this is the way of managing it as best as we can. This is something that certainly Ohio put in place originally. Seems to be working for them. Next slide. Number 8, where infield variability and crop nutrient need or environmental risk is identified, variable rate application is warranted, site-specific nutrient application is used. Basically showing that we're either through soil tests or yield maps, it's showing that there is some differentiation within the field based on soil type or topography. It is the retailer is recommended to be, recommending and applying nutrients on a site-specific basis. Certainly this is something that is fairly generic statement in this version, but that's something I think we will see get tightened up as we move forward in the future, that there will be more focus on site-specific or variable rate technology in around nutrient application. Number 9, the record of nutrient application includes, once again, this is a file the auditor is pulling, and they want to be able to see method of application, time of application, the field map showing the location where it took place, the nutrient source and rates, the weather at the time, and the weather forecast. So this is something that the auditor will want to see on all applications done by the crop input retailer. And then number 10, no application to fall nitrogen other than co-applied with phosphorus sources or to meet fall planting nitrogen requirements. So what we want to see with this is not we don't want to see any nitrogen directly being applied in the fall. Not as big a practice in Ontario as maybe it is in some other areas. But obviously, if you are doing some MAP in the fall, there will be a nitrogen component to that. So we didn't want to rule that out. Also, whether it's winter wheat or a cover crop, if there's a nitrogen requirement for getting those crops started, that would be okay as well. That concludes application.
So we'll just pause again at this part. And just a reminder again, sorry to place your phones on mute during the presentation. So we'll pause at the end of this section of application requirements to give the opportunity for specific questions related to these standards, and just a reminder that we do have a more general question and answer period at the end. So if you have any questions related to these set of standards, you can ask them now. Okay, if not, we'll move on to the final section of the standards, which is documentation. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, thanks. So we'll move to the next slide. Documentation may not have as big an impact at the farm level as certainly the recommendation and application ones will. D1 is just a requirement to help with the audit process. This is the list that the retailer will give to the auditor to help with the audit process. And D2 is basically that the nutrient service provider has to maintain records related to all the recommendations and applications. These things are happening for the most part already. D3, it's just more a privacy statement that this information is kept confidential by the crop input retailer, but is made but it allows it to be made available for review during the audit. And four just requires the retailer to have an on-site list, either hard copy or electronic, of all regulations from federal, provincial, or next. So next page. Thanks. D5 is more retailer issue. D6 is one though that that the recommendations have been reviewed and acknowledged in writing by a grower customer. Certainly, I think retailers are meeting with most of their customers, especially over the winter, working on crop plans. There just may be an extra level of a signature required on these now. And then D7 is the retailer side of that, where the certified professional to CCA will have signed off on that as well. A big part, obviously, of the documentation is having the paperwork in place and signatures supporting that. So at the farm level, there may be a bit of a push to get signatures done for these things that maybe hasn't happened in the past. The nutrient plan that is done, must include information about yield goals, the known sensitive areas, soil type, setbacks, the soil test results, et cetera. And then finally, D9, they want records to include the watershed and some watersheds where the farms are located in. This might be a bit of a challenge in some cases, but that's important. Once again, when we talked about earlier, tracking some of this data to be able to present to show that the acres that are being covered by this program in different areas, especially if they're areas that are maybe environmentally sensitive. So that concludes the 37 audit standards. I know it's not very exciting, but this is kind of the framework that the certification program will be built on. And as was mentioned, we're currently in a consultation phase, so people have until the end of this month to review and provide feedback on the standards.
Okay, perfect. So, thank you, Ron. So, at this time, we'll open the floor for any questions related to the documentation requirements. Does anyone have any questions specific to those standards? Okay, if not, there will be another question and answer period at the end of the webinar. At this time, we'll have a short post-webinar poll, similar to the pre-webinar poll. You'll be prompted with a total of three questions, one at a time, where you can select your answer of 1 out of 5 accordingly. We'll give you, again, about a couple of minutes to answer the questions, and when all the questions have been answered, we'll move on to the question and answer session. Similar to the pre-webinar poll, if you have any technical difficulties or issues, please feel free to let us know through the hands up button or the chat is probably best. So at this time, I'll launch the first question. So that concludes the three post-webinar poll questions. Thank you for your participation in the questions as well as today's webinar. We'll now open the floor for a question and answer period where you can ask questions or comments on the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program, specifically the Ontario 4R Certification Program, the standards, or any other concerns. Before we begin, I'd just like to draw your attention to one of the tabs in the GoToWebinar platform, which is the handout section. There's three handouts there for you. Today's presentation with the notes is available to download, as well as the proposed standards with the introduction in both English and French. So if you'd like to have a copy of that, if you don't already, you can go to that section and download those documents there. As well, I'd just like to let everyone know that we had a participation number of 42 attendees for the Farmer webinar presentation today. With that, we'll take questions from participants. As I said previously, you can either use the raise your hand button. There aren't any hands raised at this time, so if you do that, I can read off your name and open the floor for your question. Or if you prefer, you can type your question into the chat bar, and I'll see the question there And unless you indicate, I'll read the question off and allow our presenters today to answer your questions. So with that, we'll wait for the first question.
Yeah, or you can unmute your phone if you'd like to ask directly.
So you said there was 42 respondents today on the webinar. Is that your expectations, or is that low?
No, I think, I mean, from Fertilizer Canada's perspective, we're happy with that attendance. The actual consultation period and the standards have gone out to a broader group of people through the farm groups in the province. So it's not that only these people have. These 42 attendants have seen this, but you're the ones that have participated in the actual webinar for further explanation. So we're happy with that. We're also holding two other webinars related to conservation and public, one specifically, and then one specifically for the retailer audience, which I'm sure I think we have a pretty big, there's almost 100 for the retailer one, because obviously, I mean, this is has a big effect on their business as well. So.
Okay, well, I have another question. I still don't understand the mandatory or voluntary part of this program when there's a lot of, shall we say, or there's a number of shoddy applicators and possibly retailers out there that could go underneath the wire, whereas the ones that comply and go in this program will have another layer of administration and increased cost. I don't understand that, to be honest.
So Ron here, I can start. And as I mentioned, what we're trying to do is we're trying to be an industry program and show that industry is being proactive and working with all segments, so the fertilizer manufacturer through the retailer at the farm level, that we're all working together using the best practices with one of the goals being to avoid the regulations that would force everybody to do these things. I think we can show, and I think there's interest at the retail level, and we've done a number of presentations either through our retailers or our other events with at the farmer level, and there is a lot of interest in this. I think people want to be doing the right thing, and this allows it without becoming a regulation. And it also allows us to set kind of what the standards are. What we saw in Ohio was they developed the 4R retailer certification program, and then the state came in and set up some regulations, but those regulations were based on the 4R audit standards. So those 4R certified retailers were already in compliance, and it showed that those regulations had already been vetted through, farm and industry groups, so they were, fairly practical approaches to dealing with some of these issues. I think, going with a voluntary program, I think we will be an excellent way to show that we're doing the right thing, and we can have some numbers through this to back it up, and when we're discussing it with government and the public.
Thanks, Ron. Yeah, it's Cassandra Cotton as well from Fertilizer Canada's perspective. I think outside of, there's a pressing need in the province for sure in terms of regulation, public demand as it relates to the environmental issues. But, I think there is a need to be consistent with what's going on in the U.S. because from a policy perspective, there's things happening on both sides of the border where we're making, well, not we, but the government is making joint statements about commitments to reducing phosphorus loss to Lake Erie, so there's a need to stay consistent. I think, too, it's important that you know, if you're essentially, I think what you're saying is there's retailers out there that are just going to fly under the radar because they're, you know, the good ones are doing the things that they need to do. I mean, that's going to be the case probably in some circumstances. I think in the first few years, I would suspect that retailers that are for sure in the Lake Erie Water Basin are going to want to make some changes quite quickly. And I think it's up to the grower, too, to put some, to push the agri-retailers to meet the demands that they have. The grower should be asking questions of their retailers, and if they feel like they're not getting the service that they need, they should be holding them accountable to that and asking for something like this. I think long term, the things that we're looking at is from the food supply, agri-food chain. There's a lot of discussion even already about where food companies are getting their products from. So people like General Mills, Walmart, PepsiCo, all of these companies are looking to how can we make sustainability sourcing statements about the key ingredients that they purchase. So somebody like General Mills is saying, by 2020, we want to sustainably source 100% of our key ingredients, our top 10 key ingredients. And, you know, we've been in discussion with those companies about how they're going to meet that. There's a lot of different things happening in the sustainability space. How is that defined? And so down the road, and maybe not so far down the road, this could become a requirement where let's say somebody like that says, well, we're not going to source our product from a grower unless they're working with a certified agri-retailer. That is a possibility. I think also, nationally, there is some things being rolled out as it relates to the forest where retailers without the added component with the standards and third-party audit. Those are in regions that aren't as much of a hot spot when it comes to environmental issues and pressures being faced from public and government. But also there's an east and west difference where in the west, there's a lot, virtually no custom application happening. There's a lot in the east with the retailer. And retailers are the trusted source of information for growers. So, you guys are going to your retailer to get this information and you need to, demand that they provide you with this kind of guidance. And we're hopeful that that's what will happen. And the ones that don't do it are going to get left behind, potentially.
Okay, I have two raised hands on the GoToWebinar.
Yes, I have a question.
Go ahead, either Charles or Brian.
I have a question with respect to high organic matter soils, whether you would consider other phosphorus tests to deal with those soils. In the documentation, you referred to the Olson test.
So I have, Charlie, it's Ron here. So that's the minimum. Obviously, it would be up to whoever's making that recommendation, for them to look at it. And if the organic matter content is at whatever the level is, not an agronomist, that they required was to use a different process, that would be up to them. All we're saying that is at a minimum that soil test includes phosphorus using a level using the Olson.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
One thing that kind of caught my eye was the incorporation of the phosphorus. Now, what... Say you're in a no-till situation, what do you suggest there?
So that's something we've certainly had a lot of discussion over. The Ohio did make mention of continuous no-till, and we've removed it for now. We're hoping that the phosphorus index, once it gets up and running properly, it will incorporate things like no-till and cover crops and timing into to coming up with a number or, you know, to determine what the risk is. There's, you know, there's discussion about into a growing crop as well, and certainly that's maybe some of the feedback we'd like to hear before the end of the month. So if you have comments around that, make sure to, I believe it's Mackenzie's email, you should be sending those in. You should have, I think, that on some of your information, so I think we'd appreciate hearing those comments.
Yeah, just like Ron said, my contact information will be provided at the last slide. So if you have any comments, written comments that you'd like to provide to us, please send them to myself. I have one other raised hand from Charles Lalonde. I don't know if you already had a chance to ask your question. If not, feel free to do so. Okay. If there's any other questions at this time, you can feel free to unmute your phone. And ask or send it through the other options. I have a question possibly here on the chat. So I'll read that aloud. It says, as the NMAN software already incorporates many of these items referred to in the phosphorus index, is the index going to be included into the NMAN versus another program for initiative included in NMAN? So that question is from Janet. If you'd like to speak to that further, please feel free to do so, or we'll go from the question on the chat.
Ron, can you speak?
Yeah, so I'm not part of the phosphorus index discussion, so I'm not sure how they're going to incorporate it. I would think that the NMAN would include any phosphorus index once it's been kind of developed and approved. And certainly as we move forward, we're trying as best as we can to integrate NMAN and into how we're doing the 4Rs. So, but I can't say for sure at this time how what would be done.
Yeah, that might be a question for Gabe to expand on.
Yeah, Gabe or Chris would be, yeah.
Yeah, with the software, we have your contact information, so we can reach out to other members of the steering committee for a more detailed answer.
Okay, so, if there's any further questions or any comments on the standards, you're welcome to submit those to Mackenzie. Her information is on the screen right now. You can see the consultation period ends February 28th, and your written comments can be provided up until then. And, we're hoping to implement this fall. So thank you, everyone, for your time today, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.